From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the Jack and Spike Show.
Welcome to the Jack and Spike Show. Huge SPD news across the board this hour. I mean, yep. It just seems like SPD, the hits keep on coming. We got Heather Bosch in the studio. Kate Stone's going to join us in a couple of few. Four women working for the Seattle Police Department have accused its leadership of sexual harassment, discrimination. I saw words being used like groomer. All those kinds of things.
And all the way to the top.
So our very own Heather Bosch, Gracie Award-winning journalist, by the way, Heather Bosch.
Right, buddy.
What is the story with this? What happened here?
Yeah, this is a $5 million claim that was just filed against the department by, as you mentioned, four female cops, all of them currently working for the SPD. And I just spoke with their attorney, Sumir Singla. As Aaron mentioned, the complaint specifically calls out the alleged behavior of the head of the SPD Public Affairs Department, Lieutenant John O'Neill.
He engaged in a practice under the guise of mentoring to separate them from other individuals and essentially say that he would be the only one who could help them advance their career. And slowly his behavior towards them became more towards trying to engage them in a romantic relationship rather than a mentorship relationship.
When the women did not return his affection, they say he began lodging complaints against them. Chief Adrian Diaz is also implicated in this.
Chief Diaz is allowing this type of behavior to continue to happen.
Now, Singla says the department is well aware of the concerns of women officers. Last fall, the SPD received a report on how its female officers viewed themselves within the department.
They have a report from police officers, female police officers, outlining the type of sexism and misogyny that is happening within the department and has been there and pervasive for over a decade, yet they're not doing anything about it.
In a statement to Cairo News Radio, the SPD Office of Public Affairs said, in part, the department will not respond to the personal attacks rooted in rough estimations of hearsay, reflecting at their core individual perceptions of victimhood that are unsupported, unquote. I have never in how many years of journalism I've worked.
We don't ask a lady.
Decades. I've never seen. Generally, it's we can't comment on possible litigation, but here it is. There was also a statement about many professions require a high level of physicality and that has been and remains a male-dominated profession, referring to the police department. Yet the department and Chief Diaz are proud of the advancements made by women over the past 4 years. Again,
like an invite only Las Vegas retreat to work on your job skills. Is that the kind of environment we're talking about?
What they're saying is that there's a physicality behind the nature of just being in the building. Could be misconstrued
and this
as
is
being
a,
harassment.
Quote, male dominated profession.
Wow.
And yet we as the SPD have been working to try to help women advance. Again, you know, in several years, I found that very surprising. I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. The mayor did say no comment because of pending litigation.
So it's a tort claim for $5 million, which that's contract law, right?
It is contract law because they sign contracts providing safe work environments, equal opportunity for advancement. And this, the allegations against Lieutenant O'Neill are like, he's the only one that can give you this training. The culture of masculinity is one thing, but two, if the accusations in this, and if you got an attorney to bring a case, that doesn't mean it's going to be a winning case, but there's got to be something to these allegations from, it's not one woman, it's four separate individuals in the SPD. Comments like, I'm really good at sex from Lieutenant O'Neill, and I don't know, this is an allegation, but there is no way on God's green earth that this is folded into the role he plays within the department or the department's policy.
Okay, but let me just play devil's advocate here for 2 seconds. I say on a regular basis horrible things in the newsroom, right? It's never that bad.
Thank you.
I don't go around saying, hey, I'm great at sex, everybody. Hey.
And let's go to Vegas. You can't come.
Hey, I'm great at it, everybody. Right. But I do say things that someone could easily say, or potentially misinterpret as me being misogynistic, or it's a Friday, forgive me.
sure.
Or something that is belittling, or even something that is maybe ethnically insensitive.
Yeah.
Someone, even if I'm being sardonic or even if I'm being sarcastic, if you take the tonality out of it and then you put it into another context, it could sound really bad.
Agreed.
When potentially he was doing a judo move and he messed up at it and then he said, I'm really good at sex in terms of
in an ironic way.
Okay, right?
Yeah, that's fair, and I appreciate you're looking at it from a different way.
Right,
but you don't say the things you say. And first off, you've never risen to this level. You don't do it in a supervisory capacity.
No,
right, and that's what we're talking about here is a lieutenant working with female officers about career advancement and his different proclivities and skill sets.
Heather, what struck you? Because that statement that you read, it is dripping with legalese. The one that shocked and surprised me.
Yeah.
What part of that statement do you find to be the most, in your years of journalism, the most unusual in terms of its delivery? Because I've read nothing but no comment.
Right.
This one seems
as
fairly pointed.
Yeah. This is very pointed. I think what we need to make clear is that O'Neill is part and parcel of the Public Affairs Department. He oversees it.
Mm-hmm.
So for us to get a statement from his department saying things like the department will not respond to personal attacks rooted in hearsay, rooted at their core about perceptions of victimhood that are unsupported. All that terminology I find very surprising in what was purported to be what came off as an official statement from the SPD.
It seems almost inappropriate. I say that as someone who's been doing this for about a decade to immediately go, this is just my opinion here, to say that the claims that those four women are making are mired in conjecture, hearsay, and speculation.
And victimhood.
Yeah, yeah. And right. Keep in mind, these are not the only women who have some former employees. One, an officer nicknamed Cookie,
who had
been with the force for decades, had also, I believe, filed a claim, clearly had some complaints as well. So there appears to be what the suit is alleging here, the potential lawsuit is alleging, is that there is a pattern. It's been going on for a long time, and that the higher-ups, including Chief Diaz, have not done enough to squash what is going on.
Was that comment about victimhood, about hearsay, is that from Lieutenant O'Neill?
It was from the Public Affairs Department.
Which he heads.
Okay. His name was not there, but it clearly said Public Affairs Department.
Okay.
Heather,
sent to us.
Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate you breaking this to us. Four SPD officers accused the department of sexual harassment and discrimination. Anything you want to wrap this up with before we move on to Kate Stone?
No, take it and run with it, guys.
All right, thank you, my friend. We appreciate it. Gracie Award-winning journalist Heather Bosch. You can go read this. Again, it's four SPD officers accused the Department of Sexual Harassment and Discrimination. The thing that gets me about this story is that it's not, I mean, it's very easy to make women uncomfortable as a man, right? It's very, very easy, whether it's through your physicality, through your verbiage, or whatever it might be.
Right.
But then also, it's incredibly easy to be kind and thoughtful and, you know what I mean? There's a skill set there that is also easy to adopt.
Right, and we can see that easily. We work in an environment that is very evenly balanced between male and female lifestyles, perspectives,
unfortunately, we do.
The police department.
Am I right or am I right,
some
guys?
Some days.
I'm just... There's women around here. Am I right or am I right?
The police department doesn't have that luxury of an experiential, culturally diverse workplace. And,
right.
And it's an evolving profession, I would feel safe to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I would agree.
With whether through behavior or mechanism or procedural or just the culture of who's actually on the force.
Speaking of culture, by the way, Kate Stone has a piece as well that you brought to my attention yesterday. And I think that it's important for people to hear it because we talk a lot about police response times. We talk about a lot about the lack of police officers who are available.
Right.
And Kate, you got the skinny on a tragedy of a story, but I think it's important to highlight not for its tragedy, but what it means about the culture and the community that we currently live in. Kate, you want to break it down for us?
Right. And you guys just got done talking about the internal culture that is being questioned at SPD. This is more about the external culture and the relationship with the community. So I talked to a woman named Grace who called Seattle police after being assaulted on a downtown street in broad daylight last Friday. And she says after she called 911, nobody showed up to help. She says she was walking out of the downtown Macrina Bakery on 3rd Avenue and a man began following her and muttering some things to her. And some of them were sexual.
Kind of told him just to F off and, just to leave me alone. And I guess he didn't like that. And he just immediately slapped my butt very hard.
Grace told me she called 911. They told her to stay where she was and an SPD officer would meet her there shortly.
And I was there for an hour and they never showed.
She says she went home, she called 911 again, and they told her an officer would meet her there, but no one did. An officer called her later that night, but Grace said the treatment of her traumatic experience was upsetting to her.
Got my name and, you know, my date of birth, and then he kind of was joking with me about, oh, yeah, you know, Valentine babies, our parents were having fun, ha, ha, ha.
Maybe not the best time for a sex joke there, guy. Maybe not the best time. Probably read the room. I say yeah, this as a comedian
you.
And as a performer. You know what
thank
I mean?
You, thank
it's,
you.
It's not like I'm going to go to a Vietnam restaurant and say, hey, you guys ever hear a Creedence Clearwater Revival?
Wow,
you guys like
great,
you
right?
guys like Huey Helicopters? I mean, what do you guys think about Agent Orange out there? I mean, it's a pretty brutal series of jokes if it is true that that's what he said, right?
Yeah, and this speaks again to the lack of officers on the street in our city, right? How nobody comes. I mean, if this wasn't a property crime, mm-hmm. this wasn't a Hellcat running through the city with a noise ordinance. This was somebody reporting an assault on the streets of the city, and they didn't show up, and they went home, and the victim called again.
Yeah,
and when they came, they sent Officer Clown Show. I don't, you know, I mean,
over the phone.
It was over the phone.
It was over the phone.
Yeah.
Right. No one actually physically showed up. And you're right that SPD is facing historic staffing shortages and have for several years. However, Grace says that she was actually she had an incident in 2015 where she was on a bike and she was hit by a car and the police never showed up in that instance either.
This to me feels normal and it should not feel normal. You know, everybody wants to blame COVID for the cause of the lack of police response. But this, again, is my experience every time.
And she says that she didn't feel, based on the response from SPD, that they were really taking the situation seriously.
He could have been pissed off and turned around and tried to find me and do something else to me, you know, and taking the report, especially over phone, like, what? Who does that? I've never had the police call and say, okay, well, I can't show up to your place, so I'm going to go call you instead.
So slapping somebody hard anywhere, that's kind of the tip of the iceberg when it comes to deviant behavior and deviant intent. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
I mean, that kind of activity is, it's not exactly like, you know, this is, we're not talking about H.W. Bush here.
She was wearing a dress and heels. If I were in that situation on a sidewalk in Third Avenue, which I usually am at the King County Courthouse, I would be very upset.
Right.
You feel assaulted.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And so when I look at this, if you have somebody who randomly sexually touches another human being, that's not like a random circumstance, right?
No,
that
you're,
is
exactly.
a
yep.
that's someone who's got a lot of deviancy right underneath the surface,
and it's just rolling on the streets of Seattle,
right?
So in broad daylight.
Not to make a mountain out of a molehill, but it just kind of this is how these things escalate. It's been proven time and time and time and again in the literature with sexual deviancy and sexual crime.
Yeah,
that it starts with peeping toms. You know, it starts with these unconditional touching of other people,
yeah.
and then it escalates over time.
Well, and here's kind of the crux, is because I did talk to SPD, and they weren't able to confirm many details. They said I'd have to do a public records request. What they did tell me is that they confirmed there was an incident that was reported just after 3 p.m. An officer was not dispatched until almost 6 p.m., and then they couldn't confirm if the officer actually physically went to her house, but an officer was assigned to the case later that evening. But the questions that I had for them is because 2 years ago, there was a Seattle Times watchdog report that said an internal memo showed SPD was not investigating adult sexual assault cases due to a staffing shortage. It generated so much outcry that Chief Diaz directly addressed it in a video promising to devote more resources to investigating those cases.
If you're reporting a sexual assault, please do not call the non-emergency line. Call 911.
And Grace said that's exactly what she did, and nothing happened.
I remember when that video came out. I remember he seemed very, very serious on that particular issue.
Yeah.
And now I think that I really do think the problem with SPD is that they have a branding issue, because you're not going to get good cops and you're not going to be able to hire people unless you can update the way that SPD is perceived as being. How is it that San Francisco can still recruit cops despite the fact that they can basically do nothing? Do you know what I mean? Like, how is it that other municipalities are able to recruit police officers and maintain a certain level of staffing when Seattle has such a hard time. I guarantee you it's a branding issue.
It is, and it's the remnants of the CHOP incident in Seattle, the turnover of police chief, a failed police department's responsibility to the city.
Yeah.
Good.
No, I was just going to say this is also not the first incident of this type that I've covered. If you remember the House Street Stairs attack that I covered last year, the woman who was attacked on the stairs, she said that officer was also super blunt, and she didn't feel he was very empathetic. And both of those women later got contact from SPD after their incidents, but it wasn't the kind of contact they were hoping for.
And I just get text messages that say, that ask, how was your experience dealing with, you know, the police department and the...
Jeez.
They give you the five faces from frowny to super smiley. Am I renting a bathroom at the bus station
right, or
now?
Then when you click the link, it actually takes you to a SurveyMonkey website. Right.
So when you say a branding problem, Jack, you may be onto something.
Thank you so much for your time, Kate Stone. We know that you're running overtime just to be here, but we appreciate it nonetheless. This is going to be written up and it's going to be on My Northwest. Yes, my friend?
It will, yes.
Thank you, my friend. Kate Stone, one of the hardest working reporters we have in the building. 3 a.m. showing up to put in time in this building, my friend. 3 a.m. staying all
Great
the way
work.
Through. Terminally online, could Australia ban X or is it untouchable? See, in the United States, we have this thing we value, freedom of speech,
sure
freedom
do,
of
buddy.
Expression. We don't have thought criminals. In the land down under, not only do they have gigantic spiders.
And snakes. And whatever else will eat you in the water, sharks, and you name it.
They
barracuda.
Also do not have a culture of free speech.
No.
And they have the most dangerous animal out there known to exist. The thought criminal.
Oh, okay.
The thought criminal. Because we all know that when you think bad things, that means that real things manifest in the real world, right?
Sure.
Or wait, no, not so much. Talk about that when we get back right after this.
The internet can be a dark and often dangerous place. Only one man has the courage to go where no sensible person would go. Jack Stein is terminally online.
Terminally online. Exploring the deepest, darkest reaches of the internet so you don't have to. Now, my nemesis in life, I mean someone that I... Wait, I messed that up.
Is Billy coming on? am I in my days mixed up?
No, it's Elon Musk, a man who is somehow able to convince everybody that he's some kind of genius, but in fact, I believe him wholeheartedly to be not a genius. I'm trying to be kind, Spike. I'm trying to turn over a new leaf.
I appreciate that, and your efforts are always appreciated.
I have previously referred to him as a simpleton, as a fool, as an embarrassing individual, as a liar, as a grifter, as a charlatan. And those things were not nice.
They were
true, but not nice.
I was going to say, you weren't just pulling these out of thin air. You were reacting to the things he had done and said in the public sphere.
I had solid arguments.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm turning over a new leaf.
Good.
Because although all of those things are true, they're not nice to say about somebody, especially somebody who's deeply mentally ill. So,
are we going to go just bless his heart from here on moving forward?
No. So,
okay.
Australia is an interesting place. It does not have free speech the way that we have free speech in the United States. And so they tried to get Elon Musk down to Australia to answer some questions about the rise in hate speech on Twitter.
So their constitution doesn't afford it to its citizens the way ours does.
No.
It's not baked into the cake.
No.
Okay. I hadn't realized
and
that.
And as a matter of fact, it's actually pretty harsh. So for instance, like there was this instance of this YouTuber who was a journalist. And he was trying to follow a Australian member of parliament to ask him questions about the COVID-19 lockdowns.
Okay.
Just ask him questions. He got hit with a harassment lawsuit, which potentially could have landed him in jail for 5 years, like a $250,000 fine. He did not swear at this man. He did not ask him any questions that a journalist would not ask. The guy, the member of parliament, solely felt as if he was being, quote unquote, harassed, which...
With a club of accountability?
With a club of accountability. And so that simply would not happen in the United States, but it almost happened in Australia. So basically the way this is breaking down is that they are fining Elon Musk $700,000 a day that he does not show up in or send somebody to answer the inquiries about what's the deal with the rise in hate speech on this platform.
Okay.
This has been going on for roughly 28 days. So you do the math on that. Carry the two. Anybody?
It's $21 million. I'm good at this.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow. So that's how much he owes the Australian government at this point in time. He refuses to go down there. And as a result, now they are going to likely try to unplug Twitter from having any access within Australia.
So they're going to cut the country off from Twitter, the citizens of Australia?
Yeah, correct.
If he doesn't step up and answer questions that the parliament deems is in the best interest and well-being of its citizens.
Yeah.
Right?
So X has also been fined in Australia more than $600,000 for failing to meet reporting requirements on combating child sexual abuse material. Again, they have not paid any fines whatsoever. And what is so bizarre about this is that Elon, all he had to do to avoid all this fallout was send one of his lawyers, hire somebody, go down there and answer questions. It's not a criminal thing. They just want some questions answered. And he's saying no dice.
How do you not respond to that for 21 days? How do you not?
Oh, you mean 28 days?
28 days.
Well, so Elon is, Twitter is not a free speech platform. And so he has to go down there and he would have to start answering very difficult questions on the record about what that platform actually is.
Okay.
And so because of that, I think that he says that it's worth it to his brand to take the hit financially rather than have to be on record by saying, yes, we censor people. Yes, we take accounts down. Yes, we do that. You know, it's
proving their point would be under oath if you're in front of parliament. Would you be subject to perjury?
It's not
rules?
Even. It's a federal court.
It's
not
a court. Because it's courts. It would be
under oath.
Fear of perjury.
It would be on the record.
Was it $750,000 a day or $75,000 a day?
$700,000 a day.
Okay, so yeah, so $21 million. I thought I blew the math because the number's so bizarre. But no, that's what it is.
But what I wanted to actually use this to showcase is that I like being in a country that has such strong free speech protections because I don't think that we should try to convict people on being thought crimes. I don't use Twitter voluntarily, right?
Freedom
of association.
There you go.
But my issue with Twitter as a platform was that there was this dramatic increase in the amounts of racism, you know, anti-white racism,
sure,
homophobia, transphobia, anti-Muslim, anti-Islam, anti-Jewish, yeah, anti-Christian. I mean, it was just so awful to be on that platform that I just said, I don't want to be in this garbage pit with all these other people. And we have that right as Americans to say no thank you.
Sure, absolutely.
Weirdly, though, in Australia, they're saying that he has to basically police the entirety of that platform rather than just policing accounts that he doesn't like, you know, like NPR or CNN or whatever it is.
Gotcha.
Right.
And Mr. Rogers' account got pulled down. I admire Australia's responsibility to their citizenry. It's almost like a safe workplace. It's like he's running a restaurant. And the government will step in and say, you can't serve that tainted green meat in your restaurant to the public. I mean, and the public has the right to not go someplace, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's hard.
Well, in Australia, they have this thing called the Online Safety Act, which if you read it like how I did, because I'm terminally online, what it basically says is that you as a consumer have the right to use any public platform that and not be assaulted verbally, harassed verbally, threatened in any way, shape, or form.
Oh, that's great.
But it sounds great, Spike, but the things that I say would not be allowed on Australian Twitter. Does that make sense?
I hear you.
Say horrible things about lots of people. Remember those jokes that we were making about Donald Trump and Joe Biden?
I sure do.
That would technically be in violation of said Online Safety Act, right?
Okay.
Remember what you called the president of, or the dictator of North Korea? We can't say it here.
I know we can't. Thank you.
But that would potentially land you in Australia. You would potentially be put in prison for making that comment.
Boy, you're right. It's not easy to provide a safe work environment or a safe consuming environment in Australia and not stomp on the freedom of speech that we just take for granted often.
Freedom
of the press we take for granted so
often.
I'll
give you another example really quick. There was a comedian in Australia who was making fun of a member of Australian Parliament who made the claim that he was Italian. Now, he's not Italian. He's Aboriginal. But he was trying to win some votes in Australia because Australia is a horribly racist country. And he was trying to say that he was Italian instead of
Aboriginal.
Aboriginal.
Okay.
Wow. So this guy went to a meeting of parliament dressed like Mario. And he started asking that member
the
of
parliament.
That comedian. And he started asking that member of parliament questions about being Italian. Now, that member of parliament, everybody knows that he's not Italian. He just changed his last name to sound like it was an Italian last name and that he was lying. That member of parliament was able to use the Online Safety Act to say that he was being harassed for being Italian because that comedian showed up dressed as Mario. Think about how ridiculous that is. Think about that for like 2 seconds. Everybody knows that he's lying, but because the law is written that way, he can say, as an Italian, Australian, I'm deeply offended by this racism, even though he's not Italian. And that comedian can get hit with like a $50,000 fine. It's insane down there. And it's also a horrifically racist country. I think we should also throw that out there as well.
But you can't say it online.
Right? I mean, if I went to Australia and I said, hey, you know, the way you guys treat the Aboriginals is bad. It's pretty bad, right, you guys?
Speaking from American experience, let me tell you why.
Let me tell you why this looks, from our perspective, it looks really bad. I could potentially be fined for just saying that. Yeah, because it's again, they consider that to be harassing, which, again, I think is why it's so important that we have this culture of free speech in the United States and why we should celebrate it, because the vast majority of other countries do not have it in the way that we have it.
And it's a right we cherish and often take for granted, but it's not without cost. And that cost is you are going to be offended from time to time to time, sometimes far too often. But they have as much right to be offensive as I have to not use the service.
Right. And I have the right to be offensive all day long to Elon Musk, who I think is a charlatan and a grifter and a liar and a man who's attempting to rip off conservatives. Of course, those are mean things to say, so I won't say them.
No. You have the right to.
I have the right to say that this is a man who still bans people under the Twitter terms of service, even though he says it's a free speech platform, which is a level of hypocrisy that is almost insulting. I could say that,
but
I'm going to choose to be nice.
I like
because
this.
Being polite and kind is nice, and I think that is the best way to go about it. The Bachelorette is going to start filming in Seattle. I wasn't invited to be on The Bachelor. I don't know why.
Huh.
I'm the ideal candidate, and we'll discuss why when we get back right after this. We got a YouTube channel called The Jack and Spike Show on YouTube, where we release digital exclusive content on a regular daily basis. 3 and 5, sometimes other times, but almost 3 and 5 every single day. It's got a visual component so you can see our beautiful faces. Speaking of my beautiful face, The Bachelorette is going to be filming in Seattle with Jen Tran as the first Asian-American lead. And we have a little bit of the audio from Jen Tran. So she's talking about how being the first Asian Bachelorette helps many feel seen, including her 12-year-old cousin.
I called my cousin when I found out she's 12 years old, and she sobbed when I told her I was going to be the first Asian Bachelorette. And I was like, wait a second, are you upset? Like, are you happy? Like, I don't know. And she was like, I know, I'm really happy. And I feel like that was kind of the moment where I was like, this is a lot bigger than just me.
I'm upset. Why? I'm sad. Because I was not invited to be a member or participant on The Bachelorette. I hear 12-year-old little girls crying. I'm crying. I'm not. Why can't I go meet Jen Tran? Right?
I wonder what the process is for applying for to be one of the bachelors.
They should have come suitors to me. I don't need to apply, Spike. With abs like this, and with a jawline like this, and with hollow cheeks like these, and with sad browns like these. You know,
and I care about women.
See? I care about women. And I care about women.
That's not even the first 5 things you mentioned.
I care about women.
Right, yeah.
And I care deeply about women. And this is the thanks that I get from the women community out there that I'm not invited on The Bachelorette. Look at these abs, Spike.
I try not to.
You bounce a quarter off these bad boys, right?
You throw a quarter at my abs and it disappears like that. What movies? Stargate. My quarter is sent somewhere back in some ancient Egyptian other world.
Says an Egyptian bends over and picks it up. 1986.
What?
I'm just saying, man, I would be the ideal candidate for this.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I know that reality shows tell a story. They dictate a narrative through production and through editing. But a local radio host, you know, who is just dripping with charisma, intellect, and care.
And good looks.
And that's not even on my top 5 of things I say about you. That would be such a coup for them.
Right. Look at this facial hair. Do you think that this is easy? It is. It's genetics. Perfect genetics.
I have to glue mine on.
Andrew, this is your responsibility as my booker. Why am I not on The Bachelorette?
Okay, I'll give The Bachelorette a call.
Thank you.
Let her know that you should be on it.
Okay, well, that's the kind of enthusiasm we
really
like around here.
Yeah, I'll make a call. that's what my high school recruiter said to me, too. I'll make a call to Columbia. Good luck with you on that.
So
we don't have a promotion director here at the Cairo.
We
had a wonderful person was here for decades.
Yeah.
And has since moved on to a greater opportunity with the charitable set.
Nora, you watch The Bachelorette. You're a fan.
I like The Bachelor in Paradise.
Okay. So yeah. What does that do for you as a young woman when you see romance, when you see these kinds of things, you know, emerging drama, all that kind of stuff? What does it do for you?
It gives me hope.
Really? What kind of hope does this fast give you? Because it gives That's me nothing but scorn and disdain for human society. What kind of hope does it give you?
That you can be chaotic at any point in life. And maybe find love along the way.
And still find love.
Oh, yeah. That's so sweet. Because I'm a neurotic mess.
Well, and as you watch a show that discards 17 quality guys to get one guy.
Right.
A rose or a ring or whatever the end-all be-all of The Bachelorette is, I guess, marriage. At least a three-month stint at marriage.
I've always noticed that The Bachelorette is a little homoerotic. I said it. It's a little homoerotic.
Mm.
Because you've got 17 to 18 eligible men who are ripped out of their minds.
Hot tub friendly.
They are working out constantly.
Mm-hmm.
They're drinking all of the time.
Yeah, they do.
And they are engaging so men do this thing when they're around other men and there's women around. They call it peacocking. Have you heard of this?
Yes, yes.
It is an evolutionary, it's almost hardwired into our brains that if we were around women, we start doing push-ups, we start throwing footballs around, we start whatever task.
We suck our gut in.
Suck the gut
whatever,
in.
Yeah, I guess
right.
Some of us don't resort to push-ups on the first.
But that's something. And so when you watch The Bachelorette, there's a lot of that, but the women aren't around. You see, that's what makes it so weirdly homoerotic. And I can't be the only person that's, Nora, you're picking up what I'm putting down, right?
I think so.
Yeah, right. Yeah. There's a little bit of kind of this kind of fraternal bonding that's a little bit, it's getting hot in there and there's no ladies around. It's just, hey, you guys want to go to the hot tub? What are these feelings I'm having for you, Blaine?
Who wants to play softball? Anybody
want to? I'm having these feelings.
Pickleball's a new
one. Yeah, pickleball's a new one.
Yeah.
I'm just deeply upset that I'm not invited on the show. And
I think it's a missed opportunity for them, too. And I feel it is a missed opportunity for you to find love in front of a camera
instead of just a microphone. What am I going to do now?
Want to go crash the shoot? We'll find out where they're shooting. We got people in town. We got people who know people.
I'll just walk in there and I'll just flex and my shirt will rip off.
Start doing some of the yoga moves that you throw around like they're nothing.
Yeah.
You're making these aesthetic moves and you're so physically, you're flexible in both schedule and physique. We can get you down there.
All right. We'll
crash a set.
We'll take a really quick break when we get back. Radio legend Howard Stern interviewed Joe Biden this morning. Joe Biden says he's quote unquote happy to debate Trump. I don't think I think that's a bold-faced lie. I don't think he's happy to do anything other than sit, right? And eat ice cream.
Yeah, I think Howard lured him in with a soft serve machine.
There's been a coup to try to oust Biden press secretary Karine Jean-Pierre, and I know why, right?
Do you? I hadn't heard about this at all.
Well, she's no Jen Psaki. She's no Jen Psaki.
That's
behind
true.
The mic.
That's true.
And Seattle might be coming the next Detroit, but I don't think so at all, and I think whoever wrote this article is totally wrong. We'll talk about all that and more when we get back right after this.